Hi, everyone, and welcome to this summer mini episode of Dogs Unknown. Today, we are talking about what it's like to live with and especially to raise a dog with behavior issues. Anytime you're living with a dog who displays maybe some fear or anxiety or aggression, it's challenging no matter what. But seeing these behaviors present in a new puppy can be especially stressful and overwhelming, truthfully, as you're trying to jump in and work on the issues while also navigating puppyhood, which is tough in and of itself, which we did a recent episode on. And then also kind of imagining like what's life going to be like with me, for me and my puppy as they grow and mature and as these behavior issues kind of evolve over time. So today we are super excited to be joined by Michaela, who's a client at Instinct Northern New Jersey, to learn more about her experience raising and living with her incredibly beautiful dog, Lola, who's a 2-ish-year-old Belgian Malinois German Shepherd mix, who began displaying some concerning behavior issues as a young puppy. So Michaela, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is a great opportunity. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, no, we're so glad you're here. So glad to be having this conversation. So can you, to start off, just share us a little bit about, share with us a little bit about how you came to be Lola's human? I know you have a partner too. So how you all came to be Lola's humans?
Yes. So it was definitely very irresponsible and last minute. So, you know, just a random Friday, I just started grad school. I just saw someone on Instagram kind of post and, you know, share an Instagram story saying like, oh, Belgian Malinois, 3-month-old, in need of a loving home. And I sent it to my boyfriend thinking, oh, how cute, you know, didn't really think much of it. And, you know, happened to be the next morning we met the puppy. So we met Lola then literally the next morning at a dog park. She was about like 16 weeks and hops out of the car with a couple. And, you know, all they could tell us is that her breeder overdosed and died, and she was crated the first 3 months of her life. You know, another red flag after red flag. She wouldn't look at us, you know, would cower. I have like footage of it. And, you know, we handed them over some money and there we had her. And, you know, from that point on, it was like, okay, we're so excited for this life we have with this dog. Until soon after, we kind of started immediately noticing major red flags and these behavior issues that were definitely out of our control, and we needed to find some more info on how we could work it with our lives.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like there's all kinds of people who respond to an ad on Petfinder or Craigslist or Instagram or different places who like get their dogs that way. So I just want to say too, that's not at all unusual. You know, like I don't think you did anything that was terribly irresponsible there. I know it's just like the way it worked out. And who Lola is came with some additional challenges that you probably weren't ready for, but or expecting at the time. But, you know, I would say don't be too hard on yourself about how you acquired her, because I don't think it's outside the norm.
Yeah. Well, I think about our 4 dogs. I think I'm trying to think like there wasn't a lot of planning with any of them.
We planned who we were getting. I planned. Maybe that's you just weren't part of that process. Right.
Yeah, maybe.
Although I will say to that point, to echo that, like Jackie, our little dog Jackie, 100% was we really miss our former helper dog Sammy, who passed away suddenly. I'm going to look through Petfinder and find a dog who looks just like him, and then we're going to contact them. And so, like, that's totally right, emotionally driven decision.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, my family, we actually have a German Shepherd, and we got him from, you know, from what we think was a, you know, fairly well known breeder, well bred. I mean, he has a great temperament. He's not reactive at all. So, when I saw the posting, it was like, oh, like, you know, this could be his dog, but I could just kind of support him and, you know, our dog Bosco is just phenomenal. So how much worse could Lola be? You know, I kind of know what we're getting ourselves into. It's a working breed. You know, we have to make sure we meet their needs and whatnot. So I definitely was very confident coming into it. And I still feel confident, but you know, there's so many more obstacles that, that kind of came with that emotional, like, okay, yes, of course we have to save her. Like no one else wants her.
Yeah. So before we get into discussing some of the, you know, behavior issues and what you noticed and when and all that kind of stuff, can you just think back to like, what's one of your favorite puppyhood memories of Lola in those early days?
That's a tough question because of her behavior issues.
Yeah.
There was this one moment that when we first got her, we were completely sleep deprived, absolutely exhausted because she immediately attached to us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were her whole world from that moment we put her in the car and brought her home. So I remember us just like kind of taking a nap, and we wouldn't let her on the bed at the time. Now the bed is hers, But at the time it was like, okay, well, you could nap on the floor. So I remember just like cuddling up next to her and she fell right asleep. And I remember just like kind of like tearing to myself, like, oh my gosh, like how could anyone, you know, it may have hurt this dog, or, you know, for the stories that we heard, we weren't clear with what was going on with her past. So it was just like this most beautiful memory, because with our dog Bosco growing up, he was crate trained. Like, we never cuddled with him. He's not a cuddly pup. So she just kind of like had that attachment, and I was like, okay, like melt with me. Like, this is so amazing. This is so beautiful. And I always go back to it because that's how she still is. Like, she's to our sides, cuddles right up against us, and just so much love.
Yeah. I love that. It's like such a peaceful memory sort of to have. Yeah. So yes, thank you for sharing that. It sounds like you noticed things right away in terms of behavior issues. So I guess the when question is immediately, but what types of behaviors did you both observe with Bola? Like, what did they look like? And what sort of was your inkling that like, this is beyond kind of quote unquote normal or typical puppy stuff that she might just like grow out of?
Right. So within that week, we, you know, started having friends over. We definitely flooded her, thinking, you know, I have family telling me, yeah, I'll bring her out, bring her out, bring her out. And she was definitely shut down. We thought she was calm. So right after that little period, she was growling at everyone. People would walk in the door. She's growling at them. She was lunging at them. And the 16-week-old adorable little puppy growling and snapping at people was like, something's definitely off. And of course, we're hearing those conflicting, you know, advice saying, do this, do that. And I wasn't educated at the time, so I didn't know what to do, right? It was like, oh, if I give her treats, it's reinforcing. If I tell her no, and I, you know, almost scold her, then that's supposed to be the right thing to do, right? Like, that's what everyone's telling me. So almost immediately we noticed that. And it was just, it was aggression out of fear. And I think that's what took us a little bit longer to kind of understand the fear and how extreme the fear was, because even the wind blowing outside would terrify her. A leaf in the wind. Oh my gosh, a leaf. She's like spooked, and it's like the day is over. Yeah. So it was really fast. Same with like going to the vet. Her first vet visit was like, she's snapping at the vet at this age. And, you know, they're like, she'll probably grow out of it. And I'm like, okay, she might grow out of it. And then slowly, you know, it was must have taken a few other weeks after we got her where we were like, no, this is definitely severe.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you highlighted there. It sounds like it progressed pretty quickly to being sort of more like, I don't want to say offensive, but, you know, like she making it pretty clear, like, hey, I need space, versus sometimes I feel like puppies can hang on to that sort of avoidant behavior a little bit longer, and then it develops more over time into a little bit more reactive behaviors. But, you know, it sounds like she, I mean, who knows what her parents' temperaments were. It sounds like she had a little bit of a rough start to life before she came to you, and then her breeds to consider too, you know, in terms of how she might potentially deal with conflict if she's feeling uncomfortable. But I did love one of the things you brought up there was saying that like she, for that brief period of time before she started those growling, snapping behaviors, she just seemed like she was calm. And like, you're so not alone in seeing that, you know, like seeing it that way versus her being, just sort of completely suppressed and like, where am I? What's going on? And kind of overwhelmed. Totally. I feel like that's something that a lot of people run into. And then these behavior issues happen, whether it's 2 weeks down the line or like 3 months or 6 months down the line. It's like, well, but she was fine before.
Right.
But it was just sort of an absence of behavior versus actually kind of being comfortable. When you look back now, knowing what you know and sort of knowing what you've learned, like for someone who maybe is, we want to help them like identify those types of behaviors, like what kind of body language do you think back to that was really obvious in Lola that was like, oof, you're not okay?
Yeah. I mean, looking back at the pictures we took of her the day we met her, the moments we met her, she was, you know, just her head was cowered down, wouldn't look at us. There's photos of like my boyfriend going to touch her and her just looking away. Just like, she looked sad. And I know I read like some research study a while ago saying like, you know, we're just more drawn to sad puppies for whatever reason. There's like something in their eyes. And I think back to that sometimes because she just looked so sad. But I was thinking of it as like, she's just so cute and she's so calm. Like, there's no warning signs. Like, this dog isn't crazy. You know, she's not off the wall, jumping at our legs, like typical puppies, when I remember having puppies, looked like. So, you know, we kind of took that and ran with the calmness. And we're like, oh, we can take her places. And we did. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, would end up throwing up at some of these places. And we're like, oh, she must have had too many treats. Mm-hmm. But looking back, I'm like, I think she was scared. She would sleep the whole time. She was so sleepy. It was like, you know, it was cute. But then when we learned just very shortly after, like, oh, no, this isn't cute. This is really sad. And I'm sorry I put you in this situation. So I think looking for just those signs of that abnormal puppy, like puppy's supposed to be fun, playful. She wouldn't play with us. There was not really much interest in toys. It was just, I need to be by your side. I need to be on your lap. I need to be held. And that's about it.
Yeah. That's a really helpful overview for people. I think there's like a lot of little nuggets in there that people may be able to see.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, I mean, in particular, like I don't know if we're going to talk about this later, I'll stop now, but just about because I think one thing that's really important is like this stuff isn't really intuitive. Like it's really hard to sort of pick up. And I think it's easy for those of us in this profession sometimes to forget like how long it sort of took to acquire those skills to be able to like actually like hopefully get a good guess at like how the dog is feeling, like reading body language and doing all those things. And especially sort of with the culture around dogs and dog training and that sort of thing, it's really easy to mistake things that are fear-based as being like a dog just being disobedient or mean or they're being whatever. And I just wanted to point that out because that pressure that people feel is very, very real. It can make stuff really confusing. And I think it can be hard sometimes when you have a dog like that, and it can feel super isolating because it feels like for a lot of people, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, but like, it feels like for a lot of people, it feels pretty lonely to have a dog experiencing those issues, and people are trying to be well-meaning and giving advice, but wow, that can make stuff really confusing. It can make you feel really conflicted. Yeah. And especially if people start inserting themselves and trying to do stuff with those dogs too, can really, you know, exacerbate things and everything. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because one is, if someone's listening to this and they're in that situation, nobody should feel bad about not knowing things. And the advice we get is going to be all over the place. And two, if you are in that situation and you feel like your spidey senses are tingling a little bit, that like, yeah, I don't know if I don't think she's just being mean. Like, I think she's like afraid, and you are feeling like that, then that's definitely, trust those spidey senses and like, you know, seek out that help if you can. But yeah, I'm just really glad you did that, because it can be extremely overwhelming. It can feel extremely lonely, in my experience with clients that we've worked with, and it can be like not a great place to be in. So yeah, just wanted to mention that.
It's definitely very lonely. My boyfriend and I talk about it all the time, right? We're both in our 20s. He's a little older than me, but you know, we have all our friends are kind of taking those next steps and moving out and you know, getting engaged and having babies and all these things. We're like, well, those things are all on hold. Like, we can't move out until we can afford a house with a backyard, because she needs a yard. Like, no other option, right? You know, we can't take all this. We can't travel like everyone else. So, and you know, we do have friends that all have dogs, and they just don't get it. And they tell us what to do. And I'm like, that's the wrong thing to do, right? Like, I appreciate it. No, you can't meet her. You know, it's not this one-off meeting that you kind of could just hang out with her. It's going to take months for you to get to know her. So it's definitely very isolating for sure. But I do think that there is so much more support out there than maybe some newcomers, you know, that are new to it might not realize. Like, I know I found so much support on social media and just finding different dog pages that are in similar situations. So there is that support, and, you know, it helps a bit. And there is that hope. So,
Yes. And finding that, I think, can be go such a long way in sort of like navigating through this. So, going back just a little bit, we may have talked about this somewhat already, but like, what was you started seeing these behaviors? What were some of the, I guess, like thoughts and reactions sort of going on like behind the scenes, you know, in terms of wondering, like, did we do something wrong? Or like, oh my gosh, should we just jump in and like, I'm sure we can fix it? Or, you know, like what sort of, what was going through your head when all of this was evolving?
Yeah. So at first it was very much, I can fix this, mm-hmm. right? Like I contacted a few different trainers and they were not willing to meet with me because they said, you know what you're doing. It sounds like you've done enough of your research, right? You're keeping her circle kind of small right now. You know, you're having high value treats, you're doing X, Y, and Z. I don't think it's worth my time. And I don't want you to waste your money to meet with me for me to tell you the same thing. So mm-hmm. remember, there was a few of those conversations that I had. And, you know, that almost made me feel good, right? Like I am doing the right thing right now. But I think I carried that too long on, where it was, I don't need a trainer, right? Like no one's going to be able to work with my dog because they, you know, they were like, oh, you're fine. At the time I was also working as a behavioral therapist. So I was working with kids with autism and that background was so incredibly helpful because it's all about reinforcing those behaviors that are appropriate, that are good. So having that background is really, really helpful. Because once I finally navigated that circle of, you know, what's the best training route? Like, right, are we going to go balanced? Because that's where people see these results. Or are we going to go this more force-free route that takes longer, but builds, you know, holds onto that relationship that you have with the dog. Once I found that out, I was like, okay, now I really could use these skills that I built just in my, you know, professional background to like foster this Lola's journey. And I think I forgot where your question was going.
No, that's all right. I think
it happens to me at least once an episode. So
what?
I think answered it initially. It was sort of like, what was the sort of the whole reaction and thought process there? And I think you were just saying how like it definitely started out as a like, we can fix it.
Right. Yes.
And then kind of evolved as you got into it and got to pull into your point, like all of your background and kind of professional experience of like, well, do we fix or do we like support and improve and teach coping skills and
right.
teach life skills and help Lola live a better life knowing who she is. So yeah. So no, I you did a great job answering.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, where was I going?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny too. Well, it's not funny, but it makes me think of too, like the thing that you mentioned that like, you know, your friends with dogs, like don't really understand. Mm-hmm. And because it's amazing how, at least for me, like I remember when we first started doing training and you learn all these different things, you're like, okay, I'm going to go out and do training and work with stuff. Like, okay, this dog has this issue. And then you get into it and you're like, oh, like it can be very humbling mm-hmm. to be like, oh my goodness, like this, like the regular stuff isn't, the regular stuff and the good stuff that people recommend isn't really, you know, moving the needle at all, you know, sort of the, how quickly the context can, you know, or how different the behavior can be in different contexts, how quickly things can escalate, all of those types of things. And it's like, it's just, yeah, it's, I think that's one of the pieces that can make people feel alone. It's like no one really understands how hard it is. And I think a lot of times people think that they could do differently with that dog. And it's like, no. Like, you know, that's almost certainly not going to, it's not that people can't make things better, but just sort of taking your knowledge as is and thinking that, you know, you're just going to go change things is probably not going to happen. Yeah. But I think that's one of the frustrating things sometimes going through that is like dealing with those comments and things. Mm-hmm. So I just want to bring that up because I do, it's
a special kind of exhausting when you're sort of working so hard anyway, and you're like, oh, I'm in some ways, I'm glad that you don't understand. For their mm-hmm. personal, you know, like that's not an experience that you're going through, but also like, I really wish you could understand.
Right. We get a lot of the, I'm not scared of her. I want to meet her. I'm not scared. And I'm like, but she's scared of you. Right.
Like,
and I don't want to, there's a specific type of environment that we have to set up just for you to see her. Right. And if you can't be around and if you have to listen to us, like everything kind of has to go almost perfectly for this to be a successful experience. And, you know, like that's a lot of what we get from our family and friends of like, well, I just want to meet her. I'm not scared. I don't care if I get bit. I'm like, we don't want a bite record. Like, you know, she doesn't have one of those yet. Like, right. We muzzle trained her at about 3 months old. I mean, she's doesn't go on walks outside. She runs on the treadmill twice a day. Like we've had to add all these management techniques. So she doesn't necessarily even just rehearse the behaviors, but just so our lives could be just a little bit more stress-free because it it is exhausting, and then exhausting explaining to people everything that I just said for them to not really understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's actually, that leads into a few, we touched on things that I think lead into a few of the next questions here. So I guess one is like, what are some of the biggest things you've found that you've had to kind of adjust or recalibrate about your daily life to just help like Lola succeed and feel safe and be safe in her community and also make life like livable and enjoyable for you all? Like, what does that look like if people are out there wondering?
Yeah. So when we first, like I said, when we first had her, she was going on her walks. She's definitely scared of her walks, but we forced her on them because that's what we thought we were supposed to do, was, you know, force her down the street. But soon, at about maybe 4 or 5 months old, she runs on the treadmill. So we taught her how to do that. And that was a lifesaver because it is nice too when it's cold outside and we don't want to go on a walk. So her routine kind of is like, I'm up at 4:35 every morning. I'm doing that morning stuff. So it's treadmill, it's playing fetch in the yard, it's learning a new trick. And it's about an hour and a half of just breakfast, because that's the only way for her to be able to rest for about 6 hours during the day when she's home alone, until my boyfriend gets home and does that same routine, but for the nighttime. So just, it's really affected a lot in our lives. I mean, I was in grad school, I just finished, but you know, my whole grad school experience was around her. So like navigating what classes I'm going to take. So they line up perfectly with when she's cool, calm, and collective, and doesn't really need to be going potty or X, Y, and Z. You know, even finding a job now is kind of the tough part, because I can't be gone 9 hours of the day and have to commute to and from the city or whatever it is if my boyfriend's also going to be gone for 9 hours a day. So trying to figure out what works there is the tough part. But I mean, she was put on meds at about 6 months old. So it is helpful where she's able, once her needs are met in the morning, she takes her meds. It kind of helps her stay calm throughout the day, where we don't really need to change anything else. Mm-hmm. But it is tough in the sense that only his mom could take her out. Only my boyfriend's mom could let her out of the room, because his father and the dog aren't friends. His father, in fact, is terrified of her, terrified of dogs. Yeah. So when she's in the house, which she's always in the house, she's either in our bedroom or in the basement or outside. She doesn't get free run of the house. She's in and out with a leash on. So it is tough, but that's definitely made our lives so much easier, that we kind of have this flow and routine of like, okay, we're up first. We don't see anyone in the house. We got to go outside. We come back in, you know, grandpa leaves. We go back out, you know. So that's what we've kind of have to do, that it does make life much more smooth sailing. But, you know, being flexible to go out of our way to like say like, okay, like this is just what it's going to look like for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you hit on like, those are big things that we, and I think with Lola, it sounds like, you know, she's in a category, a smaller category of dogs, where the amount of these things that you're having to do is more than truthfully what like the vast majority of dog owners, even dog owners with behavior, who are navigating behavior issues, may have to live with every day. But I think the broader principles of what you're doing apply regardless. Like, you're like, how do we find a way to get her needs met in a place where she feels like safe and comfortable and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And for that was like the treadmill and fetch in the backyard. And she's going to have pretty high energy needs, because she's like a young adult working breed too, you know, but like, so like, how do we get those needs met? How do we set up her environment in a way that keeps her safe and keeps other people safe, you know? And then like, how do you have to potentially like adjust your schedules and manage those social interactions with other people to like, just keep life as peaceful as you can. And then, you know, I'm sure like over time there's been some skill work and things like that worked into it as well to help her, like, I don't know, maybe learn to get comfortable settling. And then the meds piece, I think that like potentially working with a veterinarian or a veterinary behaviorist, if you have a dog who's experiencing, you know, some significant levels of anxiety or fear, to help her get through the day feeling good.
Yeah. Just existing. Like, we're not home. So this helps her, because if we weren't home and she wasn't on the meds, I think she would just, you know, be pawing at the door, and have her separation anxiety would be a little worse, but it does help manage that for sure, where we can trust that she's going to be okay for, you know, the few hours that she's alone.
Right. And I think that's the important part of it too, is it's not like you're like, let's just go get some medication so that we can get up and leave Lola alone for 12 hours and not, you know, you're like saying, mm-hmm. let's get her needs met. Let's set up an environment that works for her and let's use medication as like another piece of the puzzle to help her navigate the day. And that's like,
yeah.
I think that's really helpful for people to hear. It's going to be that combination of interventions a lot of times that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I think the other thing too is sometimes like the impression, especially around behavior medication, which, you know, it can be game changing for a lot of dogs in terms of their welfare and how they can get through the day and, you know, helping them navigate situations that they find tricky. But I think the important thing there too is like, I do feel like a lot of times there's an assumption, and this comes up sometimes, that like, oh, like, people are just sedating their dogs, and like that's not actually what's happening. Right. Now, that back in the day, there was more sedating mm-hmm. happening because the classes of medications and things were just very different. And really, what that medication is like is to help them feel better throughout the day, so that they're in a state where they can cope with things. We can teach them the skills that they need to learn,
mm-hmm.
The alternate skills, and for them to be able to cope with those situations. And that's really what the medication or the combination of medications is helping out with. So I'm really glad that A, that you were open to doing that. And then B, just making sure for people listening, I think that that part is really important, because it's not even just about like getting through the day is important, but it also sets them up to, generally speaking, to learn the things that they need to do so that they can learn how to
yeah.
navigate situations successfully. So I'm just really, really glad you brought that up, and just wanted to throw that in there, because sometimes I feel like those misconceptions are pretty, pretty common.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so that's a really helpful overview. And I think, you know, either people will see themselves reflected in that and be like, yes, I'm doing some of the same things. And like, it's nice to have affirmation of that. Or, you know, if someone's feeling a little bit lost and floating, to start to think about like, what is the framework that I build around this? And what are sort of the big buckets that I have to concentrate on to make life better for everyone? What I'm curious, because it's been, I mean, you're coming up, it's been about 2 years,
yeah,
you know, and you've done sort of some self learning and training and that kind of stuff. And you've worked, I know you've been working with Instinct more recently. I'm not sure if you worked with other trainers previously, but regardless, what do you feel like are some of the biggest lessons, like these may be practical things or more sort of theoretical principles that you've learned along the way that you feel like have had like the biggest impact on Lola's behavior or just on your ability to like manage and live with her?
Yeah. I think coming just like really building the compassion, like as that foundation, like why is she so scared? How could mm-hmm. I make her not mm-hmm. so scared? And really just our goal is to make sure she's as happy as she can be. Because once mm-hmm. she's not as happy as she can be, then something needs to change. So I think having that compassion and coming from that angle of, okay, treats aren't going to make you bad, right? Like if we keep throwing, you know, we play all these scatter games in the yard when some of the neighbors are out. We've seen huge progress with her just being able to cope with the neighbor, you know, being outside, even though she can't mm-hmm. see them, as super helpful. So kind of always like reinforcing that stuff. Like, okay, let's make sure you're really happy and paying attention to her body language at all times. Like mm-hmm. we are always, our head's always on a swivel to like, not only our environment, even in our own, you know, where we live, but just like for her sake, like, okay, I hear mm-hmm. something over there. Let me set her up for success. Let me pull her over here in this corner of the yard. And so we do have her on a long line in the yard as well of having a gate just mm-hmm. so we can get to her. And for the safety of just what if, right? Like what if the neighbor's kid came outside and decided to head to the fence, which he's done before, we could, you know, kind of reel her back in. But I think a lot of those little things of, okay, how can we just make sure we're always setting her up for success
mm-hmm.
Is really helpful. And I also think I forgot your question again.
So it was just about, yeah, like, what do you think are some of the things you've learned along the way that have had some yeah. of the biggest impact? And I definitely heard like a general adopting that mindset of like compassion, like how do we help her, right? Like, how do we help her live her best life? And then I do think those mentions of like the understanding of body language and the awareness of the environment and how that impacts her are two like incredibly important lessons to take away that allow you to, with any dog, truthfully,
mm-hmm.
Set them up for success, but certainly with a dog who's dealing with some behavior issues. So I thought you answered it great, but if you have other things that you'd like to add, go right ahead.
Well, I mean, I will add, I'll add a few things now that I remember the question.
Yeah.
But, and back to the body language is, you know, when we see that smile, I'm like, okay, is this a smile or are you stressed? Right? Mm. Like, how much of this is stress, or how are you happy? Uh-oh, no, I see your tails doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like, we're able to kind of control the environment a little bit more now that we know her body language so well, and continue to set her up for that success. Like, she doesn't like car rides, and we learned that the hard way. And now we know exactly when she's going to get car sick. So it's interesting because we've become so in tune with her, and we know, like, okay, like, we actually had a training session with, we go to Englewood in Jersey, mm-hmm. and we had a training session maybe about a month ago. And I remember my boyfriend saying, I don't think she's going to have a good day today. Like, she's just a little off. And I thought, no, I think she's all right. Like, I think she's okay. Right. Like, she just had a lot of energy this morning, but looking back, it was definitely more anxious energy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why necessarily. I'm like, maybe they were just loud in the neighborhood. But she had a really crappy training day, and it was fine,
yeah.
But it was definitely like, we left and we were like, oh my gosh, I don't think we're able to like go on this trip that we're going on, mm-hmm. because I think she's going to fail her trial board just because of today. And I mean, the next week she revealed herself that no biggie, like it was just that day. But yeah. I think learning the body language and becoming so in tune with every one of her feelings, and it's like, okay, that lick is a little too intense. What is she trying to, like, why is she licking you that much? Right? Like, does she love you, or is she like trying to get attention, or is it more of appeasement? Like, what's going on? So just becoming so in tune has helped us, because we're able to then be like, okay, this is how the rest of our day is going to look.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also find, I'm really glad you touched on that too, because like dealing with the bad days is definitely a significant portion, I feel, mm-hmm. like, of like having a dog, if you're working through things. And like, and it sounds like you're in this mindset where it's like, you know, it's, you kind of have to take the day for dogs, just like people, they have good days and bad days. And sometimes those bad days can really feel like it goes completely off the rails, and it can be difficult for that not to feel defeating sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think like what's helpful for anyone who's sort of listening and doing that, and it sounds like you're sort of doing this, like you kind of have to zoom out and take like a broader view of things. Like, are the bad days getting worse? Are there more bad days happening, or like, are less bad days happening? Or when bad days happen, it's generally like less intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when owners have gotten in that mindset, I tend to feel like they actually make a lot more progress, because you're able to stay motivated. You're able to kind of take things, even though it's still frustrating. Like, there's no, you know,
you don't have to like having a bad day.
No, no. Like, yeah. It's like, I'm not trying to, you know, yeah. It's not about making it all seem okay, but I think it is important to keep that perspective and sort of like, hey, over the last 2 weeks, or over the last 3 weeks, or over the last 2 months, you know, are things, is the intensity and frequency increasing or decreasing? And I think if you can kind of frame it in that way, it makes it easier to sort of handle one of those like really off days where it's just, mm-hmm. like, oh my God, like, are we getting anywhere? Like, that's what, yeah. it sort of feels like sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Well, on that note, I'm also curious to know, because I 100% acknowledge, you know, this is and will forever be sort of an ongoing like work in progress, adapting and adjusting as she gets older, and maybe, mm-hmm. you move living. Like, there's a whole bunch of things that will make this just an ongoing process. But what are some of the things that you are most proud of Lola for, in terms of like where she's grown and improved along the way?
Yeah, I mean, because of recently when we went on our trip, we thought we would never be able to go on a trip, because we thought no one would ever be able to watch her. So, and I know this sounds like a promo for Instinct as well, but although I love them so much, like, I love you all so much, like, it's so supportive and amazing to have, you know, this resource. But we are so proud of the fact that she was able to be boarded. I mean, we did a few months of training prior to it, and, you know, we specifically worked with one trainer, and we only did like 30-minute sessions, like every week, every other week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay, like 30 minutes, like, I was just pretty stressed out. So, but let's see how far can, like, how, you know, like, the trainer's never touched her. How are they going to, you know, board her? But the trial board, she did absolutely fantastic, showed no aggression towards anyone. They were able to kind of like take her in and out. And then the whole boarding, you know, it was 8 days. We've never left her for 8 days. So the fact that she was able to cope and, you know, eat. And eventually day three, she was playing and she was apparently getting pets. Like, I still can't believe it that she was getting pet and licking people. Like, it blows my mind. But then the part of it that's like, okay, well, this is very obviously they're telling the truth. She doesn't like men. So the few men that had to interact with her, they were like, well, she just was like neutral to them. Like, she didn't like them, but she did it. So we're like so proud of all of that. And even proud of the fact that she was able to look at a man and just say like, eh, like not going to make that choice. So I'll just let it be and go potty and head back in. So it's just like, that's definitely our biggest thing right now.
That's awesome. And I think like, as much, I know it's harder to view it this way, but like you should also be extremely proud of yourself for taking the, like the effort that went into setting her up to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you had just said like, let's drop her off, which I know we wouldn't have, like, that's not really how we operate anyway. If we feel like a dog is going to have like some special behavior needs and need some more time, but you know, you wouldn't have, she could only accomplish that because of everything that you put into it beforehand.
Right.
You know, but that's amazing. Like, you should be proud of her for that. That's a big deal.
It was awesome. I mean, we're funny enough, we're actually going away next month for a wedding, another one, short trip, but we're like, there's no stress. We know where she's staying. Like, it's just going to be fine. Like, we'll be at training this weekend. Like, and we're curious to see how is she going to be around the people. Like, I'm sure she remembers them, but I'm sure she'll still throw her little fit and be scared and, hey, I'm the big girl in the building kind of thing.
It's different when your social support is behind you, right? Like, when mom and dad are with
you. Like, well, she's comfy with us. Like, of course she could express how she's feeling, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't expect anything less. I'm the same way. And then I guess the other thing I'm really proud of her for is her recovery time. She used to like have her little reaction and we didn't think of it until now looking back, like, wow, like she was done for the day. Mm-hmm. Like, she would have a reaction to just like the neighbor or the garbage pail outside. And she'd be done. Like, there was no turnaround. Now the neighbor comes out, you know, you call her name, you throw the ball, she kind of will run after it. And then you could lead her inside. Like, okay, we're not going to hang out because the neighbor's out. Let's just head in. And she's back to normal. The stress is kind of gone. You know, she's really calm, looking for love. And could take, you know, and just could be a dog.
That's amazing. That I got little goosebumps.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like it's such a good example of what, like, sometimes it's hard to communicate to people who are maybe just starting out on this journey or who have never been through it at all before, like what success looks like and what a big deal that is. And the fact that like she's a more resilient dog and the fact that it's not that she doesn't care about the neighbors or she wants to go give everyone kisses all of a sudden, but it's that like, it's a part of your day and her day now where it's like, we know what to do together, right? It doesn't ruin our day. We respond like you're able to navigate through that situation without, and I'm not saying every time, but without like a huge amount of conflict and stress and worry. It's just a part of how you do things, but it looks different than what you were originally expecting, right? Like, you probably weren't planning to say, I need to call your name and like maybe reinforce with the ball. And then we head inside when the neighbor comes out.
Right.
You probably would have just envisioned it to be like a non-event and you don't take any action, but like, that's such, I love that example of what progress and success looks like for a dog like Lola.
Yeah. Well, also too, because it's like, that is completely life-changing for a dog. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm hoping it, you know, makes your life a little easier too, but, and that's still important. But like, for me, why that hits me and why I got goosebumps or goose pimples in the U.S. I don't know. I forget. We're from Nova Scotia originally. We always say goosebumps.
We're Canadian.
We're Canadian. So people sort of look at us funny when we say that. But the reason why I got that like little hair stand on the back of my neck is because like that is significantly changing how an individual sees the world and how they feel the world and how they experience the world. And it's like sometimes when I talk to people, it's like, think about like, you know, if you had a really stressful time in your life, I think for some of our dogs, when they're like really reactive, have a hard time recovering. If you think about some of those really stressful times where like you just couldn't recover from stuff, like that's a pretty tough place to be in on a day-to-day basis. And to start to see that, aside from the fact that, hey, we want to like get their behavior in a certain place where it's easier to manage them or whatever. But like for me, like what I see is like, oh, that's like a dog feeling so much better. mm-hmm. like in their own skin. And like, that's why for me, I sort of got goosebumps or goose pimples, whatever.
Michaela, what do you say?
We say goosebumps.
Okay, goosebumps. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
We're all good. Yeah. No, but thank you so much for sharing those. Cause I love them.
It's a big deal.
Yes. A huge deal. So switching gears a little bit, I have just like a couple of questions left I want to be mindful of your time. But so we started talking about this a little bit earlier, like some of the challenges with navigating like conversations with friends and families who might not really understand. For people who might find themselves in like a similar situation with a dog like Lola, like what advice do you have? Like, how do you talk about Lola's behavior and set boundaries with family and friends in a way that feels good and doesn't just make this like an ongoing, it may still be ongoing, but how do you navigate that? Like, what have you found works best?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think depending on who that member is, family member, friend, yep. I like to also come from that angle of like, well, what do they already know? And like, how could I use like some type of metaphor in like human life to explain to them what's going on? So when I say like, oh, like she's, you know, she's super reactive and aggressive, they're like, so is my dog. I'm like, I know your dog. I know your dog, which means no, like not really like Lola. Like, so I'll say like, it's like she's having a panic attack and she can't think. So if you're telling me that I need to do X, Y, and Z, and she needs to learn how to sit, sitting is the last thing on my list of priorities. I want her to just feel like I'm her biggest reward. So I always try to pull from like their heartstrings of like, oh, well, what would it feel like if you're having a panic attack, right? You're having a panic attack. You can't think straight. Someone tells you to calm down. You can't calm down because it's not as simple as that, right? It's about changing the environment and maybe surrounding yourself with the people that help you calm down, as opposed to, hey, cut it out, stop barking, you know, stop lunging. So I'll try to use some of those examples. You know, oftentimes I get told we need to go to Caesar Milan, and that always kind of sends me off the deep end, because I was raised watching Caesar Milan. And, you know, I think there is a bunch of good stuff, but also it's fairly outdated. And someone who comes from a research background and, you know, have done so much research in the past 2 years, just being in school, I try to explain to my family about, you know, the outdated, inhumane techniques of training and mindset, and explain to them the scientific basis. And the other example I often use with resource guarding, because she has some resource guarding tendencies, it is really the last thing on our list to worry about, because it's not severe and we know what is going on with it, right? Like if it's a brand new toy, brand new bone, I'm not bothering you. Tomorrow it's going to mean nothing to you. So hang out with it. I gave it to you for a reason. So what I always explain to my family is, and usually we're like sitting at the table, I just grab their food from them. And I'm like, oh no, right? Like, doesn't that suck to be taken, like to have your food taken away from you? Or like sometimes I'll talk to my dad and, you know, I rip his phone out of his hand and I'm like, oh no, out, right? Right. Like that wasn't cool. No one would want that to happen to you.
I got to tell you, I've wanted to do that to people and I never have. So I'm so glad that I get to live through you on this one. So please continue.
I mean, typically my boyfriend's like back there and he's like, cut it out. Like, really? Why do you even make a scene? But I'm like, I'm just advocating for my dog, right? Like, it's just, I'm trying to explain to people in the best way that, no, my life isn't how I planned it to be. And, you know, never in a million years would I have ever thought this would be the situation I'd be living with, having a dog like her. Mm-hmm. But it's not me. I've done everything I can and I'll continue to do everything I could do. But it's really saying like, okay, just becoming flexible and explaining to my family how I've had to become flexible and how it's okay. Because like my life is not over. Like Lola's life is not over. So I think that's the difficult conversation a lot of times is you're missing out on so much, or, you know, wouldn't it be so much easier if you could do X, Y, and Z? Or my friend's like, why can't you hang out tonight? I'm like, I honestly rather hang out with my dog. Right. So I don't have to explain to her what's going on. Right. Yeah. So I think having those conversations and picking and choosing who you have specific ones with is important. I mean, I do have certain family members that we don't talk about Lola.
Right.
You know, they want to say what they want to say. We've been there in the past. We're not touching on it again. So there's no, Lola doesn't even exist in, you know, when I'm with some family members. So also I think taking a step back, and it is a bummer, right? Not being able to share those moments of success are just like, oh my gosh, this day sucked. Like, ugh, must be so nice to have a dog that isn't like this, right? Because we're human and we still feel that way.
Absolutely.
But I think, yeah, picking and choosing and pulling in those examples of human life is helpful.
Yeah. I like that you highlighted, like, you're not going to approach it the same with every family member.
Me too.
You know, and I think, and I forget who said this, but that's sort of like, are they reachable and teachable? Because if they're not, mm-hmm. then like, you're just going to be expending a whole lot of energy that you don't, you know, it's just not going anywhere. That's frustrating for them and frustrating for you. So I'm really glad that you kind of called out the difference between the two and that you're not going to be able to, and nor is it your job to like convince or educate everyone. I think the most important thing is just holding firm to like, whether you understand or not, I hope that you'll support me and Lola and what I'm doing. And you like being firm about whatever boundaries you have to set for her to keep her safe and to keep other people safe too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. I love that.
Yeah, I do too. And I also love that you touched on the fact about just like, you know, people, you know, when people might say like, hey, like you're missing out on stuff or, you know, this is a huge commitment and is this something? And I like, there is, because I think one of the things is like when most people get a dog, like this is not what they are signing up for. So I think it's like always important to sort of like to recognize sort of like how far above and beyond that you both have gone in order to do that. Like, I think one, like not everyone is able to do that, mm-hmm. like either with the skill set that they have or the resources that they have or those types of things.
Or like the living environment mm-hmm. or, yep. you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And so I think it's just important, like, and you know, it's good that, you know, obviously people, if you tell them like, well, this is what I want to do, then that should be good enough. But I did want to just bring that up just because I think it is important. And I'm sure your trainer at the Englewood location probably said this, but like that sort of going above and beyond type of thing is just really, it's really special. And I think it's hard if people haven't gone through that before. Like, I think to understand like why we would choose to do this or go down mm-hmm. that path. So like, so just for anyone else, like, again, I think that's the other sort of lonely part of this sometimes, especially when you're getting that feedback, but also just, it's important to recognize that the work that you're actually doing to change, you know, Lola's life is like a big deal, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. and not everyone is able or willing to do that. And that's okay too. There's no judgment, but also I think sometimes it's important to kind of step back and reflect on that a bit.
Yeah.
Because it is a big deal.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we are very grateful for not being kicked out of the house or like, not, you know, like yep. not being forced to get rid of Lola. And although right. there's been those conversations,
yep.
mm-hmm. it's in the hardest conversations ever. Like we'd be a friend saying, you know, go the behavioral euthanasia route, go the, you know, get rid of her. And I'm like, well, no. Right. Like we've had those conversations. We've been there and kind of been like, okay, what do we do? Like, is this the rest of our life? Mm-hmm. But then was touching on those successes that we have, we're like, okay, like we see this. No one else needs to see this. Just we mm-hmm. need to see this. And, you know, recognizing, okay, we're really grateful for the support we do have, like financially and you know, having a shelter over our heads with mm-hmm. a dog that hates the landlord. We always joke, like, well, you hate the landlord, right? Like, yeah. just please like him. It's, you know, it is important. And we are grateful for the fact that we can be flexible with our lives because, you know, they're kind of just starting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of like, it's this weird, I feel like it's this weird, like double, when you're living with a dog with these types of behavior issues, it's almost this, like you have to do sort of like lots of planning and preparing, but you can also only really take the day in front of you mm-hmm. as anything, which I mean, I guess, which is life, like there's only a day in front of you, but you just sort of have to take it a step by like step at a time and say like, these are our circumstances now. And we feel like we are making it work and can make it work. And we just need to reevaluate as we go, mm-hmm. you know, totally. Like based on Lola and how she's doing and based on us. And just, that's just all you can do, yeah. you know, it's like the best you can every day. So again, for people who might be like finding themselves in a similar situation, I'm curious, like what keeps you motivated to continue working on things? And this is kind of a double question. What are some things that you do? Like, what are some activities that you do with Lola that kind of protect your relationship with her and that just bring you both like a whole lot of joy?
Yeah. So it's different for both of us. For me, I like to teach her new things. Mm-hmm. So that I find is like really reinforcing to our relationship. It's like, like I said in the morning, like I'm teaching her a new trick, because of course she learns a new trick in 5 minutes and then that's it. You know, she knows it by name the next day. So always working on that, like that's a lot of fun for me, and it keeps me there. And I'm like, okay, I'm half asleep this morning, but I have to sit outside with you and, you know, babysit you as you go potty in the morning. But it's those little things. And then for my boyfriend, it's play. Like the play was, she, like, I could throw a Frisbee and she's like, eh. But he comes home with the Frisbee and or whatever the toy is. And it's like, I've never seen a happier dog. I mean, he's definitely her favorite human, and I'll allow. I'm like, that's okay, you know. But I think just seeing her happiness and her love, like, we know how capable she is of trusting, because she can trust us, right? Like, she has never shown any aggression towards us. And we know if she ever did, it's not even out of her not liking us, but it's okay. Like, well, how did we set her up for failure right here? Like, what did we do wrong? So I think just knowing the love she has and the amount of trust she has in us, and seeing how brave she can be, is really, I think, what keeps us, you know, pushing every single day for her and always advocating for her and advocating for other dogs just like her. I mean, we'd fall in love with dogs so much more just having her. We're like, you know, this is okay. Like, we could have any other dog in the world and we'll be fine. Like, the rest of our lives, we'll continue to have dogs, and I'll be more than happy to have dogs just like her that I could, you know, make their lives as happy as, you know, they could be.
Well, she will, no matter what, like, eventually, hopefully many years down the line when, you know, Lola moves on, she will certainly have left a very lasting legacy, because, I mean, the lessons that you'll learn from her and the amount of sort of knowledge you're going to have about behavior and about supporting a dog and all that kind of stuff, like, you know, I know it's not stuff that you necessarily, I'm not trying to put a silver lining on all of this, you know, but I do think that's one of those things that, like, wow, these dogs leave lasting footprints.
Oh, yeah.
For they sure. really, really do. So, which I think is also just something that's like, yeah, you'll have her with you for the rest of your life.
Always. Yeah. Oh, my you know? Gosh. Always. Yes.
Yeah. With everything that she's taught you. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I love that you highlighted that, like, both of you do different things that Lola enjoys, but that bring you joy and that you really enjoy doing. So I think that's a really important part of it. So to wrap up, I guess last question is, what, fairly brief, because I know it can be probably long, but what advice do you have for someone who's maybe, like, just first observing what they think is maybe fearful or anxious or aggressive behaviors from their puppy, right? Or from, like, maybe from a new dog? Like, what advice do you have for someone who finds themselves in that situation?
To carry cheese with you.
That's great advice.
Or just, like, maybe do less than you think that you should do, and, like, take that step back. And definitely do your research and do a lot of research and, you know, see where you stand on, you know, whatever style of the training, and get help sooner rather than later, because I think the help not only helps the dog, but I think it's more supportive for you knowing, like, okay, it's like a therapist. Like, having a trainer is like literally having a therapist. They get you. They know exactly what you're talking about when you're explaining what's going on. And I think that's just really helpful.
Oh. I love that.
Man, that answer about do less, like that is such a good answer.
It is.
Because, for a whole bunch of reasons, I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole right now, but I think it's just like that, like you said, taking that step back, getting a breather. And then it's, especially when you're kind of dealing with lots of different things, it's like, how do we prioritize what's going on? How do we focus on the right things and focus on things that are sustainable and going to help us move forward? And that a lot of times can be less than you actually think it's going to be. So I that answer is so friggin' good.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It's like, you answered that better than either of us would. I feel like that's like the most perfect piece of advice to give someone in that situation.
Yes.
So I think that brings us to the end. Thank you so much, Michaela. This was incredibly helpful. And I loved learning more about Laura too as we went along. So
thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That brings us to the end of the episode, everyone. We will see you next time.
All right. See ya.